Good evening. This is a break. Pardon my glasses. I left mine at work, and this is somebody left on my desk in the chamber, and so they will do in a pinch. I've got a new BlackBerry. I have no clue how to use it, so I was trying to delete some emails, and I looked up and said, "My Lord, it's 7:15. Anyway, so I left them there. Fortunately, I don't need them to start. Okay, so this is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Zoning and Planning Committee of the Board of Aldermen, whoever has it, they're bigger than I am. And today is Monday, March 12th, and at the start of the meeting, at 7:45, we have Alderman Swiston from Ward 3, Alderman Yates from Ward 5, Alderman Kalis from Ward 8, and myself, Marcia Johnson, Chair of the Committee from Ward 2, and Alderman Vicki Danberg from Ward 6, and Vice Chair of the Committee, and Becca Smith, our committee clerk, and we have Seth Zarin, Chief Zoning Code Official. Marie Lawler, Assistant City Solicitor, and Eve Tapper, Chief Planner for Current Planning versus Past Planning. Okay. All right, the first item. Do we have Mr. McLaughlin? Great. Just in time learning, just in time training, all that stuff.
Thank you.
This is docket item 390-11, Friends 2, William McLaughlin, 117 Hammond Street, Newton, being appointed as a full member of the Zoning Board of Appeals for a term of office, filling the full membership vacated by Selma H. Ehrman Esquire to expire on September 30th, 2012. Welcome.
Thank you.
The drill is that you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to be on this wonderful committee. Board,
yes.
And then we will ask a question and the initiation will begin.
Perfect, yes. Hazing, right?
Now, hazing's after you get in.
I've been here before when I was first nominated by Mayor Cohen and as an alternate member. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm back because I'm ultimately aspiring to be a permanent member.
Right.
First of all, I appreciate your patience. I know it's been a few times since I've been able to coordinate schedules. I travel weekly for my job, and without much notice, I generally can't move things around. But with plenty of notice, I can be here. In fact, the zoning board typically gives you up to 6 months' notice. So, be that as it may, I have been a resident of Newton for just under 20 years, and have enjoyed that experience. Educated six of my children so far through the Newton Public Schools. So, I feel as though I've got my money worth out of the city and should give a little bit of something back. I guess I became interested in the zoning board over the years, having been before them as an applicant in my day job and witnessing what I thought was a less than stellar organization. I've been in the
agenda. I don't know if we have any extras. Is there an extra?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Been in the real estate development business for my entire professional career, which is over 25 years, predominantly developing mixed income or market rate multifamily rental housing. As I said, I've been in the city for just about 19 plus years at this point, and have an undergraduate degree in economics from Harvard College. The zoning board was of particular interest to me, again, because of my personal experience, but also because I felt it was an area where my expertise from the day job might have the most impact. I am pretty well informed on land use issues, have been for a number of years, although I'm not an attorney. I certainly can hold my own in a land use argument with many attorneys. And I have a particular area of focus in Chapter 40B comprehensive permits. So in the past couple years since I've been on the board, I've served on the 40B subcommittee as well. So I think that that's an area where I can add some value. You know, my personal experience in the city is that it has been intensely developed over centuries, not decades, with lots of nonconformance, lots of older homes to predate zoning of any kind. And we have what I consider one of the most complicated bylaws in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, from my own experience. So I do think that there is...
We're working on that.
Well, it gets seemingly more complicated as time goes by. So I think there is an important role for the zoning board to help cipher through situations where there may be a true, unique hardship. So that's generally what my interest has been.
Okay, good. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. McLaughlin? Yes, Alderman.
Well, first, in what you just said, truly unique hardships. Could you comment on the statutory standards and their application in your service?
Sure. I think the definition of a variance, a successful variance, is one which is a hardship because of either the topography, the shape, or other dimensional issues related to the lot itself. We have tons of examples in Newton in terms of both small lots, oddly shaped lots, difficult topography, nonconformance I mentioned earlier in terms of some of the older houses. You know, my general sense is to apply some common sense to situations that arise that, again, because of the convoluted and complicated zoning bylaw, in my opinion, tends to render some unintended consequences. You know, I certainly think that we should be gatekeepers in terms of precedent for variances. Variances should be dear and fairly rare, but in the instance where the standard is met, I think that we should apply it fairly to applicants who are seeking it.
Two opinions have been expressed on variances, one being that if you follow the law strictly, you could almost never grant one, and the other one being that if nobody objects to it, why not?
If that were the pendulum, I'd be closer to the if nobody objects to it, why not,
okay,
common sense approach.
Okay.
My sense on that is that the immediate abutters and neighbors have the legitimate gripe. If the bylaw doesn't allow for something that's being asked for, then they should be protected. But 25 years from now, once that addition or garage or what have you has been built, and it's in place in the neighborhood and is a fixture, when new people come through, they have less to complain about. Makes sense.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on the Bradford Road controversy?
I'm not familiar with Bradford Road.
Yes.
Maybe we were sitting. It was the Commissioner of Special Services granted a permit and on some land that adjoins some developed land, and the surrounding abutters challenged the issuance of the permit in. Went to the ZBA. I don't recall you sitting that night.
I didn't.
The ZBA failed to overturn the permit. It was further appealed up to the land court, and the land court basically denied the permit, saying that it did conflict with the existing ordinance. So maybe
did it hinge on the fact that the lots were owned?
Yes.
It has something to do with that.
That's old school, yeah.
But the land court appears to feel it's correct school.
No, it's proven precedent, right. That's a statute that's been around for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is the docket item. But
I'll need to let someone else have a chance, please.
Sure.
Okay, Alderman Jamberg.
I would just like to comment that I know Mr. McLaughlin as a generous donor to many of the charitable organizations in the city, and I would like to move approval.
Okay, great. All right.
Okay. The reason we had you back in, or as well as you were going up from full to full from part.
That was the reason.
One of the potential issues was that your resume, your very impressive resume, included on, I believe, the advisory board of CanDo, and CanDo,
correct,
being a frequent user of 40B, that seemed to present a difficulty. That how have you resolved it, or how would you resolve it in the future? Would you?
I don't think I'd sit on a CanDo application because of my relationship with CanDo.
Okay. Fair enough.
Any more than I would sit on an Avalon Bay application if there were another to come forth.
What are you telling us?
Nothing. Absolutely
not. Anything else? Any other questions? And we've been joined by Alderman Scott Lennon from Ward 1 and President of the Board. Any other?
Okay. That's a motion.
I know. I'm just making sure no one else had any questions. Seeing none, all those in favor? And that's Swiston, Yates, Danberg, Lennon, Kalis, and Johnson. So
Thank you.
You are approved, and it will go before the board on a week from tonight. And you do not need to be there because nothing will happen because you're there.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Please come
if you want. I may. I'm in town. Well, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for coming, and we do appreciate it. Okay. The other point is he's not coming in. I'm going to just leave that at the end so that we can let the planning department do their thing. The next item is Alderman Document Item 49-11, Alderman Johnson, Chair of Zoning and Planning Committee, on behalf of the Zoning and Planning Committee, requesting that the Director of Planning and Development and Commissioner of Inspectional Services review with the Zoning and Planning Committee the FAR data collected during the 8 months prior to the new FAR going into effect in 12 months thereafter. This committee review should occur no less than bi-monthly, but could occur as frequently as monthly based on the permits coming into the department. So we don't have the Director of Planning and Development, but we have Mr. Zarin, who's going to give us an update. We all had a memo.
Yep.
Okay.
No presentation.
No presentation.
We'll just go through the memo and
all right.
Discuss what we can see and take your questions. So the last time that we came before this committee to give an update was actually, I believe, back in October of last fall, immediately following the date on which the new rules came into effect, which was October 15th, 2011. The current FAR rules were passed by the board about a year ago, in February of 2011. And were worked on extensively for over 2 years through both a working group and then also through the committee process, with really the intent of addressing how best to regulate residential bulk in our residential areas for existing structures, for new structures, to really sort of pull that whole picture together. And just to recap here briefly, the issue, in part, was that there are a number of features that were not included in the calculation of FAR ratio, and that the sense was that those features, such as the half-story above the second floor, such as detached garages, portions of basement that might be above grade, could still impact the perception of bulk of the structure, but weren't counted, and it provided an opportunity to play clever design games that might lead to larger structures that read as smaller structures. So the sense was that we should count more, count everything, but then because you're counting more things, you have to allow a higher limit. So that was sort of the ethic at the time, was to sort of keep things relatively neutral, but to count more and allow more. And the question we are looking at now is that working for the majority of cases that we see now that those new rules are into effect? So if you'll see in section 2 of the report, data collection, we've collected nearly 100 of these worksheets over the last 12 months. There's been something of a slowdown since last October, unsurprisingly given the winter. We expect that the number of worksheets that we receive will increase as we move into the spring and new permits are being filed for construction in our residential area. We should also note that these worksheets do not reflect all of the construction in the last 12 months. There are certainly projects that would not be reflected here either, where there were no changes to the external structure of the house and no sheets required, or where in the instances where it was quite obvious that the structure would fall within the FAR threshold, we didn't make them go through to filling out the form process. But where there were things were close or there was a specific concern, we did. Yes?
So why wouldn't you include those in here? Wouldn't that change the denominator of everything that you're looking at? I mean, if you're looking at the full set of all construction going on.
It's a challenging question, and I don't have a perfect answer for you. I think part of the sense has been that the Inspectional Services Department deals with, as it says in the memo, between 2 and 2,500 building permit applications a year, and so there's quite a large number of projects moving through. And there was a sense that I think that we couldn't force people to do these sheets, but we could encourage them in the situations where we thought it was helpful. So we've been encouraging people to do it, and we've been collecting from those cases that are on the edge or where there's some question, and that's been the real focus.
Okay. It's just that of the total construction that's gone on, the percentages where they're over the FAR limit. Right. It's far less than actually the budget.
Yes. Yeah. It's not, the percentages here are not meant to reflect the total number of projects that are done. And that, we understand that. We recognize that. Unfortunately, there isn't an easy way that we've been able to address that concern. We've been working on it with the Inspectional Services Department, but we've had difficulty with the kind of data they've been collecting about their projects to even give a realistic estimate of the number of projects that do involve a change to the envelope structure. Unfortunately, I wish that we could have more of that information for you, but it's been very difficult to obtain. So that's sort of it in terms of data collection side of things. If you turn to the next page, page 3, we have a breakdown of those worksheets that we have collected over the last year and how they fall into sort of 4 categories. 4 categories are projects that are non-conforming under both set of rules. They won't work either way. They require special permits either way, I should say. There are projects that are conforming under both sets of rules and would themselves be would be by right under both sets. And then there are the 2 other sort of categories that I think people are most interested in, which are the projects that would have been conforming prior to October 15th, but are now non-conforming. And conversely, those projects that would have been non-conforming prior to October 15th, but which are now conforming. And one of the things that we expected to see and that we have seen is that obviously prior to October 15th, very few people were submitting worksheets that showed that they would do better under the new rules than under the old. But after that time period, we've seen an uptick in the number of projects that have come in for building permits, which have done better under the new rules than under the old rules. Now, still a number of projects that are coming in that would have done better under the old rules and now require a special permit. And we're working them through this normal special permit process in those situations where that is the case. What we expect to see is as the projects continue to come in over the spring and summer, that we'll have a larger pool. You know, only 25 projects, it's a little difficult to draw conclusions about what that pool will look like, and we're hoping that as the new construction season comes into place, we'll be able to see this effect more clearly.
Seth, question. On the conforming under old rules, non-conforming under new rule, of those 8, and I think it's, of course, the percentages are a little bit disconcerting,
right,
because you're only talking about 25 right now.
Yeah.
Did those 8 homeowners go for special permits?
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't have the full worksheet up, you know, that we have. But
that would be
fine. We'll go check.
Okay. Because that would be helpful.
Sure.
Kind of what happened to these?
Sure. We could definitely get you that information.
Okay.
In each of these cases. In some cases, we bring in the worksheets while they apply for special permit. In some cases, they come to the counter and file a building permit, and then they're like, oh, well, you can't. So. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, these are legacies from old special permits that we've already been working on from last fall that finally moved to the process and are now filing.
Can I just ask Alderman Heffenhan, who has joined us in from Ward 3 and is Chair of Land Use, have you seen, as Chair of Land Use, many special permits around this sort of LPFAR? I know you're on the spot.
Eve may be able to answer better than I can. What she's asking is whether we've seen some of these instances where FAR special permits what you're asking is, are we seeing the ones that
couldn't make it?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a couple that have been under 10,000, and then we've had several that have been over 10,
okay,
because that's the 10,000 is developed a lot, and the. I have to be honest with you, off the top of my head, I don't know.
Okay.
Right. But I know that we've had, I mean, all of them have passed.
Okay.
So they've ultimately gotten
I think
permit.
Having a little bit more information,
sure,
I know, Alderman Heffenhan, that you and your committee are moving things, excuse me, through the process along with the planning department at a more rapid rate.
Can I give you one caveat, though, is that one of the difficulties we have at every single meeting we've had, working session on an FAR, is we'll often be asking how do you compare it. And they can compare that specific house under the old and new rules, but when they're trying to compare to the surrounding neighborhood, they can't, because you can't get into somebody else's house. So whether it's, similar to what the other houses in the neighborhood are is often kind of, throwing darts at the board.
Can I ask
Sure, go ahead.
So
do you want to come straight to the table?
We could Skype them in.
As I read every week the different held of information in the packets, I see the a lot of the projects that come through your committee, and the FAR is a little bit higher than, so it makes it non-conforming to the new
Correct.
Rules. But typically, the recommendation of the planning department is to pass it and then it can pass.
Yeah.
Is that more often what's happening than not?
Most of the time we end up passing it. It will often, just to explain what happens, when someone comes in to do a project, they'll go through the design review team, and there's a whole review that goes on in the planning department and various other departments, ISD and various others, will give some comments and feedback about ways to maybe improve the project or make it more conforming or deal with the nonconformities in a way that are going to look less massive. And, oftentimes, the petitioners may disagree, but oftentimes it'll improve the project in a way that it makes it easier for them to make a recommendation. But, by and large, what we're looking at are projects that come through because the planning department is willing to support them once they've been, worked out some of the kinks in the process. Trying to think of a specific example that was recent. We have, often it's to add an additional bedroom or to add, take a what's currently an outdoor space, like a porch, and make it an indoor space and close it and so forth, and now counts an FAR. The added confounding variable is, of course, we have the new rules where space that didn't used to be countable is now countable.
Right.
So there's a little bit of apples to oranges that goes on, but by and large, what we're seeing is most of the projects that come through, my humble opinion, could probably just as easy go through administrative site plan review, because we come out to the same place without really, there's no value added, and although for the petitioners there's 6 weeks added to the process so that they can go through, zoning review and all the other things they have to go through before they can file a special permit. So, we're pretty much seeing projects that have had the benefit of getting the design review, and I think that's the good news. The bad news is they then have to go through the board, which our committee I think does a good job with them. It's just that it adds some time and expense onto the process.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Do you want a little bit of?
Yep.
So, just in the 5 minutes that I'm looking at it, I would say that there was less than half a dozen that have gone to. I would say maybe 10 over the last year total before and after that have gone strictly for FAR reasons. Some of them, one of them was a 2,000 square foot lot, and there's really nothing you can do.
That was that the 19 square foot one?
Yeah. Maybe.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was.
And then there was also, in addition, there was a house that went for special permit that was the so-called footnote 7 house, which started this in the first place, where if you didn't knock down 50% of the existing house, if you didn't mark down 50% of your house, FAR didn't apply, and so this house was already well over, it was an enormous house on not a large lot. But it's illegal, we put together, so with the new rules, it became non-conforming. So again, they were adding on a very small, it was an enormous house on a normal size lot, and so they had to go for additional.
Was that the one backing up to the condo?
Okay. Exactly. And, but for the most part, they're usually pretty small. We do try to, as Alderman Hesnihan said, we do try to talk to the applicants beforehand to figure out if they can meet their goals without needing to go get a special permit. Sometimes the lot size is just so small that there's anything you can do. The School Street one, where the lot was so small to begin with, they were only adding 19 square feet, which you would think wouldn't need a special permit because the lot was so small. So we haven't, I would say, I was here when we first got rid of the footnote, and I had Seth's job as chief zoning code official, and we probably had 24 or more that summer, because people were designing their houses before it changed, didn't realize it was changing, and they didn't want to redesign their houses. I think for the most part, it's slowed down because people now understand generally what the rules are, and they've figured out how to design their homes in order to avoid the special permit if possible.
Right.
So I don't know. I know that the numbers, you know, you want to see what the numbers are, but I don't think there's been an uptick since October 15th is what
No, I don't, and I agree with that. Currently, as a zoning code official, we haven't seen a great rush for or after in the number of special permits for FAR. It's important to note that actually in many cases, special permit for FAR that might be recorded in the work sheets is also getting special permits for other things.
Yeah.
For, you know, extension of a non-conforming setback, for parking, you know, for various other features that might exist on the site. And in some cases, you know, part of what's changed is we didn't used to count their garage, and now we do count their garage, and the property was already pretty close to the threshold, so now they're kicked over the line, and so anything they do at that point requires a special permit. So there is a range of different types of projects that we see coming close to this line. We see people crossing the line by a very small amount, it could be 0.01 over the threshold of the line. The challenge is that any place to set a line, there's always going to be someone right at it, right under it, right over it.
Yep.
We've also seen projects come in requesting 0.1 or 0.15 or 0.19 over FAR, which is a significantly larger increase or a significantly larger number compared to the FAR we expect for that property. So there really is a range of the types of projects. In some cases, you have a large FAR number because there's already a big house or because the lot's really small. And they're only doing something very modest to the house. In some cases, it's because you've got a fairly normal situation and they're doing a very large addition. And it's difficult to capture that in these numbers, but we can certainly think about ways to show you a little bit better, to break into this category a little bit more, this category of what was conforming and is now non-conforming when we come back later in this week with more worksheets. Are there any other questions in sort of the analysis phase? Because we also met in the interim with the former members of the FAR working group, some of whom I think are here tonight. And we have a quick summary of what they talked about with us.
Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Seth, on that, like, I know you haven't had the uptick, but part of my concern, I think I mentioned at the last meeting, is it's tough to know, want to know what we don't know, because.
Right.
You may have people that are sitting back saying, well, I'm not going to bother doing it now.
Right.
I used to conform, I don't conform now, so just forget it. And then, that could have been a reasonable project then.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a reasonable project now because, we've changed the rules. They don't want to come forward.
Right.
Which ends up, it's also, revenue loss for the city and on both fronts, et cetera. So it's hard to tell, where I see... the breakdown of data collected before the 15th and then after the 15th, of course, you don't have that uptick now because of the time of year. But I think I mentioned at the last meeting, we had some really raw data that was put together that showed that it was quite a spike that forced people now to go to special permit.
Right.
And so I know you're going to get into the working group's thoughts, but I think that they're right, and I think that personally, I think that we need to move some of those numbers so that those same projects that were good before, under the old rules, that would be good under the new rules. That the project isn't really changing much. I think we were trying to, one of the reasons why I supported it was because of the ability to give smaller homeowners a chance to do some things, some modest improvements. But now that we're seeing the analysis on the larger side, I definitely think we need to look at the legal concerns.
Right. Well, it strikes me that there are two ways to sort of address the concern you're raising, one of which is to look at the FAR limit itself, which, as I didn't mention this earlier, but Paul McKayla, it's on a sliding scale now, so that larger lots have a higher fraction and smaller lots have a higher fraction. Larger lots have a smaller fraction. But that those numbers, the results we looked at, and then Alderman Espahan's suggestion that in some cases, and I know that the Land Use Committee has been mentioning things along these lines for a while now, that
a lot.
There might be some way to, for those very small increases, there might be some administrative pathway that, could cover that space. But I'm going to defer, in some sense, to the FAR Advisory Group's recommendation that really that it might be best to play out the full testing period to really see what the, over that full year of operation, what the impacts.
Yeah,
That would be October 2012, that we would finish that data collection period and hopefully have more information for you. We'll continue to work with ISD to try to improve the quality of information that we are able to provide you. And hopefully that will make us feel more comfortable with where we are. I should also note that in the interim, we've done, both before October 15th and I think even afterwards, we've done some educational workshops, both with local contractors and builders and developers and attorneys, but also with a local real estate group, courtesy of Alderman Swiston. Has been very helpful in organizing these workshops. We've actually been doing a number of them, providing planning educational sessions. So we think part of the reason why there hasn't been uptake is that also people have become more comfortable with and better able to work with the rules and to avoid having to go into special permit or be able to walk consciously into that. So with that, I'd like to just sort of very briefly summarize the FAR working group's meeting that we had. The former members of the FAR working group, in a purely advisory capacity, just wanted to get their feelings on how, especially as many of our practitioners, attorneys, architects, builders, what their feelings were on how these new rules are working. And broadly speaking, the group felt that they were achieving the desired goals, that more information would be helpful over time as time goes forward, both in terms of the worksheets, but also then starting to see some of these houses built under these rules actually, you know, get up out of the ground. It's one thing to look at a plan, and it's another thing to look at a house in a neighborhood to really understand how the rules are playing out in reality. So I won't go through all of the categories in the memo unless there are specific questions about them, but we discussed several ways that the FAR limit could be modified or the calculation of gross floor area could be tweaked, but that was sort of the general feeling of the group at the time.
I see Henry Finch or Finch?
Finch.
Finch and Christine Hsu?
Chris Hsu.
Chris Hsu, sorry. Not Christine?
Not Christine.
Okay, sorry. All right, so both of them are members of the original FAR working group that I'm not sure how much you were able to read up on while you were running for the election. So are there any comments that either or both of you would like to make in regards to what Seth had to say?
Just to kind of recap where we started way, way, way back. This was 2.5 years ago. I was on Cape Cod vacation. I got this phone call saying, I'm getting appointed. And I'm like, oh. So we met like every Tuesday, every other Tuesday for like 2 years anyway. So, but the reason that I...
Every day.
It seemed like every day. But one of the reasons that I personally was interested as an architect, I was running into non-conforming small lots, primarily the SR2, which is the bulk of the media part of our zoning, and that the smaller lots that were already non-conforming were being penalized in many respects. And so I was trying to give, that was my personal goal, was to give relief to those, you know, because the zoning is imposed. It's not like we all started off with 10,000 square foot lots. So I wanted to make sure that the non-conforming smaller lots were able to build a little bit, you know, more. And so that was my personal reason for even doing it. And so after all that, the FAR numbers, I think that we came up with, and we have many scenarios. Some were weighted towards the smaller. Some were weighted sort of more towards the middle. And we came up with sort of, you know, I think a good game plan. And I think what was actually implemented was that everything was scaled back just a tad. So maybe we were right to begin with, but just to be on the cautious, you know, sort of, you know, err on the side of being not enough. So maybe ultimately we might end up where we started with originally. So, but it's heartening to see that we haven't created, you know, something that's like, wow, you know, this is completely berserk. So it seems to be relatively in line with sort of the things that we're seeing, you know. But also one personal thought is that I think, and I ran into this, is that although actually for my this one project, it could have gone. It was borderline old and new. But it did bring up to mind the fact that if you have an existing lot, it was pre-1953, old lot, non-conforming. learning. This is a 5,900 square foot lot in SR2. And they had a detached garage in the back. I'm thinking, you know, we made it either way, but I'm thinking, what if that garage had been, you know, a few feet bigger? We would have been sunk. We would have had to, you know. So it just seemed like if it's set back, and this is, I think Mr. Lojek's idea at the last meeting was that if there was an existing garage, an existing lot that had, you know, that was detached and that was sort of minimal, that there should be some, you know, some way to deal with that, where if it's not contributing to the bulk substantially, like right next to the house, but it is, anyway, so that was the thought that I personally liked, although the majority of the group did not like it, but I personally thought that was something worth considering. Anyway, so that's what I have.
Great, thank you. Penner?
My thoughts would be that FAR was new for existing houses about 2.5 years ago. That's what started the whole thing. It really only applied to new houses, and it was the issue of what is a new house. It was a way of making the FAR measure what we intended it to measure. With the older rules, there were all kinds of gimmicks you could use to get more, where the really intention of FAR is measuring the mass on the lot, proportional to the lot. And so there were things we weren't measuring. And so our direction was to not try to actually look how anything is used, but what the mass was. And that's what these new rules all pushed in that direction, to actually measure the FAR. And that's why we included the garage. So that was the intention that this does. There's a few places where I feel it doesn't. It leaves a few things open for manipulation. One is how we measure basements, which I brought up at the meeting, where I have a project now that just by changing the grade about 2 inches, it changes the FAR, how much we're measured by over 500 feet.
You shouldn't say that because we'll come after you.
In another town, you meant.
Oh, of course.
So, yes, there are things we have to correct, but we all agree we should wait until the October time. That, to me, is one which could be improved. The other, one of my fears has been the third floor description. A fearful that we have too many houses airing toward very low-sloped roofs. I think to date, Seth, that hasn't really shown, is that right?
That was the conclusion of the group at the meeting, is that there is this concern that the rules might lead to flatter sloped roofs, but I don't believe IFC has actually seen any movement in that direction in terms of the permitting. And several members of the meeting expressed concern houses like that would have a hard time selling. And yes. After last winter, might have a hard time standing up.
That's another. It's just a sealed roof rather than
the ice thing. Yeah.
How we measure is much improved, and we probably could improve a little bit more on those ways we just discussed. And we've gotten rid of many of these other gimmicks that we used. The one other point which made me sort of go along was that we're doing this because Newton has overlaid zoning on existing conditions. So we have whole areas in certain zones, like SR2s, where all of the lots are existing non-conforming, and all the lots already come close or go over FAR. And the one vehicle that made it that this can work is the special permit. When we look at the special permit, what it's intended, which is something that you can do as long as you meet certain conditions. And sort of it deals with the special cases of the unequal zoning in Newton. To me, the thing that changed it, or that makes me feel better, is that these special permit hearings are now, as you said, 6 weeks, rather than the old 4 or 5 months, and maybe you'll get it or probably not. So the design reviews happening before, and the quick turnaround of the special permit hearings for FAR, to me, are a critical component of it working. And so far, it seems to be. So I appreciate that. I don't agree with what Chris said as far as garages go, because to me, that's just what the FAR takes care of. That's what it deals with.
I would go along with that if there were an administrative mechanism to similar to the historical review, where we have somebody that can administratively, you know, approve things that are minor. That's sort of how I got involved in the cult in the first place, because it was like, you know, we had to go through all that whole system, and now that can be taken care of administratively. Similarly, if there's something relatively minor, maybe an administrative person could, you know, have the authority to do that. That would help a lot.
And one of the things, Chris, that you know, the group may think about with the planning department, I know at some point it's no longer on our agenda as far as I know, but Candace and I went through this about whether some of the special permit granting authority could be given either to the planning board or ZBA or administrative site review plan. So it's something for you all to think about. Are they? Because I think it would mean some... to pass the board to some strict things of what can.
We're unanimous, I believe.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, but I think that what you need some... Exactly. So if that's something as part of what you're doing, then you need to think about working with Seth and everybody else in the planning department to come up with something that may or may not pass. So Alderman Kalis and then Alderman Yates.
So I'm not sure who's to. Maybe it's to Alderman Sisson. I'm just, or anybody else, I'm wondering how the non-policymakers are looking at this and what they think of the new FAR rules. Does anybody?
So you mean by, like, what the realtors are?
Realtors, people that are, you know, that are own houses and want to do something with them. You know, what do we have feedback from?
Most of the feedback.
Most of the developers and contractors and architects that would
basically homeowners and real estate agents, they kind of feel like this is just something that gets put on them, so they're just happy that they have a way of following it. I don't even think it occurs to them that they get to complain.
But it wasn't something
I
that was...
I would say pretty carefully a lot of them don't like it.
The builders definitely don't like it. That is what I've heard, is the builders have a real problem with it. And, you know, the homeowner, depending on whether they're caught on the special permit side or not.
Right.
Most of them don't have an opinion until they've got a project in mind.
But we still get complaints on houses that are too big in their neighborhood and so forth. So they, you know, and it goes to, again, you know, the Ms. McLaughlin's point that, you know, what might be, you know, gross and awful to somebody sitting there who watches this thing go up when they move out, you know, people move in, just see it as part of the landscape. So it changes. But, I'm sure if you haven't gotten a complaint or two, you will. Springtime.
Give anything time, you will get a complaint about it.
I'm not. This is.
Sorry.
To be fair, you get it both ways.
Yeah.
You will hear from folks who are, you know, building certain things that were done before that can't be done now, and you know. Now that you're counting more, and I think it was the FAI working group that had actually proposed higher numbers.
Yes.
That we had implemented.
Right.
So, you know, maybe if those ranges are adjusted, the project people were doing before, which wasn't detrimental, could be done under the new rules. But that's why I think you're here around the table, there is some consensus about trying to see what numbers are the right numbers.
And maybe this committee reduced the limits.
A couple of things. I mean, I appreciate what's being said that, yes, it would make a lot of sense to have minor things be dealt with by day staff. However, I think what is a minor thing can be greatly argued about, and the most obvious example is the case that we had, which concerned Bradford Road in the Highlands, also concerns Goddard Street in Ward 8, and also concerns Pine Ridge Road in Wobbin. So I would be very leery of opening doors at the discretion of administrators who are not very carefully directed. And I have tremendous respect for Mr. Lojack, but I think he's gone off half-cocked on that Bradford Road thing, and so does the Massachusetts Land Court. So I would be very careful about something like that. Two other just observations. The top of page 4, it says the group agreed it would be nice to have a definition of sloping roof. And we do have an item to that effect on page 4 of our agenda, but frankly, I can't remember where that stood.
I have to go back and look at the pricing sheet.
So it does seem like that might be something useful to take it up. It's the committee. And I've noticed that when a whole committee is docketing something, sometimes nobody interferes anything.
It's interesting. We did.
It was related to the height and grade plane definition change.
Yep. And we didn't change those, but we can change this.
Everything was getting very
esoteric.
No, so we just wanted to focus on a couple
of things. Went beyond the docket item.
Yes, it did. Right. Okay. And it was just
Seem like that relates to the group.
Yep.
In the first paragraph, the next thing about grading around the house was a reasonable way to reduce the appearance of bulk. Well, yeah, that's true. I can see that. However, the thing that I've noticed in my ward, and I speak specifically to a corner of Margaret Road and one of the other Francis, I think, down by the city yards off of Elliott Street, there's a new building that is... Some reasonable people in that neighborhood have questioned it, like, how'd they do that? And basically, it's the grading around the building. So it's much higher than, I mean, physically, if the plane of the top of that is higher than the plane of the top of the others. And the way that's done is that the lot has been built up so that you have just a different grade to start from. And it just seems to me that the grading has been used as a dodge for some things. There's another one down on Sullivan Ave going between Elliott Street and Chestnut Street. Some of the neighbors down there still don't speak to me because I couldn't do anything about it. That was built into the side of the hill, but the way the grading works, basically... The first floor garage, the basement garage, the garage under, is at the very level of the street, and it just looks like it's a four-story building because of the grading. So I think that thing cuts both ways, and I'd be willing to look at that and see if there's something there. I think that was it.
Okay. Yeah. And we have a similar one on Cypress Street where it looks like a skyscraper from the street level.
Yeah.
And that, I think, was one of the ones that made the wall of shame on John Lojek's power presentation as being one that they wanted to
The other thing is that when you tear down a little house and you put up a big house, no matter how big it is, it's going to look a lot bigger than what we had.
The other thing, in light of Scott's comment, is that I think that the smaller lots tend to suffer much more in this sense, in that... Their ability to make changes is much more constrained than if you've done a much larger lot.
And the differences are going to be much more noticeable.
That's right. And so the areas of the city that have the smaller lots are going to be much more effective than the areas that have the larger lots.
It also makes it particularly challenging from a regulatory perspective because if you have a small lot, pretty normal sized buildings starts to look like a really large up there. That's a challenge.
And in some of those neighborhoods, I think that a larger FAR is just fine.
Right.
And I think that there maybe ought to be different FARs in different areas of the city.
Well, maybe we need subdivisions of the existing districts that I'd say in probably every one of the residential districts, there are some areas that conform both by lot area and by all the other technicalities, but there are others where everybody is under, and I think the proper thing is a major map change so that you have maybe the same number of units, but the other stuff is adjusted so that the bulk of what's there is conforming rather than non-conforming. So you might have SR3A and SR3B, and those the use would be similar, but the details would be different.
Yeah, I don't think it's the time or the place for us
to
get into the details and the weeds here, but these are things that can be looked
at. Anything more stuff on
that? That's the recommendation of the FAR working group alumni was to continue to hold until October 15th. The planning department
so moved.
Largely agrees with that idea. So I guess we'll be back in a few months or whatever.
Well, what I would like to suggest so that we don't just leave it till October and we hear nothing. So I would like to request that there be a written report at the end of May, beginning of June, to see what we're seeing. Because we do anticipate with spring coming, and especially coming earlier than it might normally have.
Or never gone away.
Skeptics who think that there's no impact on the environment, but anyway. So I just think that, and it can be a written report that can be submitted to the board, but I think coming back, so every couple of months, if you'll just do a written report, and then we could have you, yes.
Can I ask, seeing that we're coming into budget season, we're doing an ISD budget, I don't know if you can relate this to Seth, but I don't know if it's
on vacation for
the point I'm trying to get at is, you know, over the few months that I met with some folks who weren't so much in favor of doing this, you know, there was the concern that we were going to have a dramatic drop-off of building permit revenue, which was legitimate. So, seeing that we're coming into budget, you know, is there a way to sort of, you know, comparatively see you know, what building permit, but again, we don't know.
Like, look at revenues.
Yeah, but it's like.
And you don't know what to blame it on, because there's also.
Somehow breaking down the matters.
Market.
What they are, I mean, what type of permit it was. I know John's done that in the past.
Yeah. I can certainly ask the question, and we'll see what we can do working with ISD to pull some numbers.
So I think it's important for the board to see if that is the case.
Right.
And I'm on the,
you know, to see how it would work. I could put together some more specific thoughts on it, but you know, I think generally you understand what I'm trying
I think we've seen it from ISD before.
One challenge potentially, I don't have to get into the weeds, but we'll do what we can to pull that both numbers together and try to give you the best context we can.
I can try to work with you too as we get closer to that too, but I think the ISD budget is probably on the large extended over the weekend, at the beginning of May. So I think it leaves a little bit of time.
Well, you know, I think also just overall, are we seeing, you know, we've got the economy and, you know, kind of, and so some charts and graphs and so forth would be helpful. Okay. So there's a motion to hold. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor? That's Kristen, sorry, Yates, Sandberg, Lennon, Caleb, and Johnson, and all your husbands. It's not fired from the city. So thank you all.
But he's a fine person, so. But it's more fun than watching paint dry.
Yes. Oh, but you're here all the time to do it.
Yes, so. I am. Yes, I am.
Docket item 162-11, Alderman Yates requesting a report from the Director of Planning and Development on the status of the updated open space and recreation plan, particularly as it pertains to the Charles River.
Everybody to show up tomorrow night. I'm just going to open it and
I'm
not sure when to
be here.
No, I've been attending the meeting of the Open Space Planning Advisory Group. And right now, it's the collection of the survey data. I had some trouble personally trying to activate the survey. I did finally get to it. And the other thing that struck me was that I was actively involved in developing it, but when you actually get down to cases, I don't know how helpful it's going to be in terms of, I think there are specific projects that I'm interested in, and I didn't really know how to communicate them through this the questionnaire. Stuff like the Upper Falls Greenway, stuff like Quinn Road trail system. It's I'm not sure exactly what the product is likely to be, but now Seth's going to tell us.
Well, sure. Alderman Yates is referring to a survey that was released into the ether, I believe on February 8th, and it had a bit of a slow rollout, but we've been doing a good job of spreading the word, and we have over 100 responses as of the last time we checked the pool, which is a few weeks ago, and I know there are more coming in every day. We also have hard copies that are now available at the Senior Center and at the Public Library. We've been advertising the survey in the tab, the patch, and just recently in the PTO newsletters. And all of this is leading towards, on the 21st, we'll be having an open space advisory committee and planning department are hosting a public workshop, which will be at the Senior Center. It's March 21st. I didn't write down the hours, actually, my key here, but sometime that
day or evening.
It's an evening. And then between the survey response is and the response to the public workshop, the advisory committee will be coming back together on March 28th, it's about a week after the public meeting, to begin to review those results, to digest them, and to begin to think about drafting an updated open space plan. The expectation is that sometime after that, after a few weeks after that, if they had time to digest that data and begin to think about the potential conclusions, we'd like to come back with more information, more of an update from the Open Space Commission now that we'll have that data. The only other date that is significant, really, on the timeline is, I believe there's a date that's been penciled in for the Planning and Development Board to have a public hearing on July 9th. So that's coming up in sort of the medium term. That's the general state of activities at the moment. I have some background information if anyone's curious about why we're doing open space plan. But
I think we've got enough terminal
useful. Oh, okay, sure. Well, so the open space and recreation plan, which was last updated for the period of 2003-2007, and the open space and recreation plan, it expresses a vision for how the city is going to use its open space, set up priorities for infrastructure investment, for protecting natural resources, for working with the state. In particular, having an active plan makes it eligible for certain state funding sources, which is kind of part of the impetus to do this now and to get up to date. And one of the major goals also has been reviewing that previous plan and figuring out what goals have been completed, where our priorities are the same, or where they've shifted, and thinking about where we want to be going in the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay.
That's the rough shape of what we're working on.
All right, Alderman, this is your item, so go for it.
Well, there's two things. When I hear only 100 people completed the questionnaire, I can't help thinking, I think the Newton Conservators have several times that number of members. So it would be worth your while to reach out to the conservators and see if they can feature this in their next newsletter or something. Or they may have already, but it just seems like that's really low.
That was several weeks ago. I haven't actually gotten the updated figure from IT yet.
Yeah.
The engineer's working on it. But I can certainly check to see where we are now, and obviously that's a good idea, and we'll make sure that gets out there.
The other thing would be, and this does come to the jurisdiction, this committee particularly, that law department, it seems to me that something that says open space and recreation plan for the city of Newton sounds an awful lot to me like it's an element of the general plan or the master plan for the city of Newton. And I've raised this question at some of the committee meetings, and I don't know that we can make a conclusion. I think Candace said something like, well, it's not really a master plan, it's more like an action plan to implement the master plan. I'm not completely happy with that, but it seems to me if this is what is supposed to guide the city in its open space activities for several years, that sounds like what the charter envisions. I believe it says recreation open space specifically in the charter as an element of the master plan. So I think by the time that they generate a plan, that I think we should have figured out what its status is going to be vis-a-vis the charter. I think it is interesting it's going to be heard by the planning board. If I recall correctly, that's one of the things that you do for elements of the master plan.
That's correct. You have to have a public hearing for companies. I don't know what the statutory requirements are for the open space plan or state's requirements. You know, there's a fiscal, it allows you access. I don't know what the requirements are for that.
I don't know how to resolve it, but I think it does need to be resolved at some point. But
that's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, then I'll move to hold.
Okay. This is not for, so you can take that offline with him, okay? Thank you. Anything else? What is your preference on this, Mr. Yates? Is this something that needs to be dealt with again?
I think they'll have to report back to us at least once more. I would think that. Then it would be the actual plan would be the docket item.
Okay. All right. So do I hear a motion?
Yep, move hold.
Okay. There's a motion to hold. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor? Swiston, Yates, Danberg, Lennon, Kalis, and Johnson.
Move to adjourn?
No, we got one more.
Docket item 399-11, friends to James H. Mitchell, 83 Countryside Road, near the center, being appointed as... thank you, Seth. I'm sorry.
Thank you. No
as an associate member of the Zoning Board of Appeals for a term to expire February 1, 2013. The concern that Alderman Sangiello had was that Mr. Mitchell sits on the Licensing Commission, and her concern was that we are trying to spread the wealth and get, you know, more people in the city involved with versus less. And to have one person sit on two fairly substantial boards, both ZBA and licensing. Mr. Mitchell, as I understand it, and I can't remember, came from the law department, Candace, okay, that Mr. Mitchell is in agreement that he would do this. However, we need to make sure, and the message needs to go out to the executive department, that he needs to be replaced. So to take somebody off the licensing commission at this point in time. So this would be an appointment with the caveat that the administration
replaces him on the license
as soon as possible.
Why on licensing versus not doing this?
Because that's his choice.
Oh, he prefers this.
Yes, this was, yeah.
Oh. Okay. I was going to suggest his wife. She's Associate General Counsel for DCR. Sort of relevant.
So, anyway, that is the situation. So,
I would favor that. I would move that.
Okay, move approval?
Yes.
Any further discussion?
Well, move approval with that caveat.
Yes, right. Yes.
Is Alderman Sangiello on the staff?
Yes.
I would imagine after the recent couple of things, we'll probably get a couple of people interested in stepping up.
Now you raise a really good point.
Or they might be afraid.
So, there's a motion to approve with the understanding of to the message. And Beck, we'll have to think about maybe there's a memo from Zoning and Planning to the Executive Department staff that they do this expeditiously. So with that, any further discussion? If not, all those in favor? That's Swiston, Yates, Danberg, Lennon, Kalis, and Johnson. Now, Alderman Yates.
Move adjourned.
I want you to notice what time it is. Well, it's not really.
Five minutes.
You are so good.
I think it's time to change the clock.